Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. Research into ring history reveals no more fabulous story of the squared circle than the true life account of the prize fighter Henry Armstrong, the only fighter in history to hold three world titles at one time. In a chapter entitled, The Saga of Melody Jackson, Destination Freedom tells for the first time over radio the story of the triple title holder.
Say, what about this guy you hear a whistling and punching that bag? What about this guy, huh? Suppose you was this guy. Would you do what he did? Suppose they called you the human dynamo, the buzzsaw, perpetual motion. Suppose you were built like he's built, solid like a brick. Only your eyes. The doctor said another punch in them eyes and you're blind as a mole. Suppose they told you that, huh? Would you do what he's doing? Getting ready to go back in the ring and fight again? Now, that's the question I want to ask you. So just suppose you were him. Suppose you'd lived in St. Louis since 3 on Franklin Street, had gotten out of high school with a scholarship in your hip pocket, and on your way home, stopped by a gym to watch some pugs skip rope and whip the bags, while a woman in a fine brown frame patted her feet to keep time and nodded her head when you came up.
Hi, honey boy.
Hi, Mamie. Say, who are you training now?
Some refugees from Alabama.
Huh?
They want to fight heavy. I still need you, featherweight.
I ain't cut out for prize fighters.
Want to be a surgeon?
That's right. And when your prize fighters get their eyes all cut up, send them to me. Doc Jackson will fix them up. I don't need no woman to teach me how to fight.
Well, a man taught me, and I didn't complain. You go on home, and when you want to make a living, my gym will be open. All right, pep it up there, you guys. Pep it up.
And suppose you'd grin, and you'd walk confident down Kinsey Street past Dr. Vinter's house with a pavilion and fine bay windows, and you walked on till you hit Franklin Street, crossed the railroad tracks, reached a shack with painless windows that stared out like empty eye sockets. You were home.
That you, son? Uh-huh. You're always standing there looking. Come in. Come on in before it starts to rain. Well, tell us. Say something. Did you get it?
Yeah, I got it. The dean said go over to Washington University tomorrow and register. And a full scholarship.
Oh, praise the Lord.
Oh, Grandma, two other kids want them too. Ain't nothing.
Now, go on away. Don't be a teasing, Henry. Let him alone.
You were left alone. And that night when the gunny sack curtain was drawn and split the one-room house into two parts, boys sleeping on the east side, girls sleeping on the west, you slept near the door on a pallet beside Grandma. And when everybody was quiet, she said,
Son?
Yeah, Grandma.
I reckon Pearl would like for you to be a doctor, all right.
Pearl was your mother. She left the world when you came into it.
The preaching grandson's what I've always wanted.
Grandma, I want to be a doctor so I can be like Dr. Vinter.
Huh?
I just want a house, a good house with windows in the sockets. With windows crystal clear, with the sunshine pouring all down in it, all over me.
Suppose the next morning you woke up whistling, you got on over to Washington University, tiptoed down the marble hallways, peeked inside the surgery classes, and while your fingers pretended they held a scalpel, the registrar's secretary called you.
This way, please. The registrar will see you.
You walked into the registrar's office and saw sunshine streaming through the windows, splashing over the desk, and you took out your scholarship certificate and he blinked.
You... You are Jackson.
Well, the principal of Vashon High said I came out second in the contest for the medical scholarship here. Well,
he should know better than to send Negro students here.
But, well, he said...
Miss Benson, get Vashon High on the phone.
Yes, sir.
Of all the nerve. We don't take Jews, Negroes, Mexicans. They know that. Well, as for you, boy, I guess it's not your fault. You won the contest.
No?
That stupid principal never should have allowed you to enter the contest in the first place. We're sorry, but we couldn't possibly admit you. Just an unfortunate mistake, that's all. Just a mistake.
And back home, Grandma could read your mind.
The Lord ain't got no color line, son. Ain't no quota for his gospel preachers.
And when your old man came home tired from the packing house that night, he advised without delay.
Tomorrow morning, put in your application over to Stockyard. They'll let you work until that day comes. Last hired, first fired.
That day was the inevitable layoff day.
Them hands is delicate, but you should be strong. Pearl didn't monopolize all of you. Do my kind of work. Make a different kind of man out of you. And the A.M. hit the stockyards.
You hit the stockyards that A.M. and 300 other A.M.s. You turned your fury against the stock and ran up a record in the slaughterhouse and the sheep kill, pig kill. You swung hammers over the steers, butchered, scrubbed, cleaned, shoveled, as days melted away like minutes. And then that day came. And you picked up jobs in bowling alleys and steel mills, levee camps, iron foundries. Got on as a spike driver in a section gang on a railroad crossing, wielding a sledgehammer as if it were a golf club. Outside, your body was growing tougher and stronger, while inside you dreamed the same dreams.
Okay, hold her up, hold her, hold her.
You watched the train glide by, stared for a brief instant eye to eye with strangers lounging in a club car, saw one of them let a newspaper flutter out of the window. And as the foreman called for the hammers to swing again...
Okay, driver in.
All right, get going there. You're holding us up, kid. Holding us up.
Just looking at this picture here.
Oh, Kid Chocolate done it.
Huh?
That's Kid Chocolate's picture. Hey, gang, lay off, lay off. Hey, hey, come here, come here. Look here. I just got a wire from New York. Kid Chocolate of Cuba just won the championship by knocking out Al Singer.
No,
got $75,000 for his labor.
$75,000?
Yeah. And it says right here in the Reliable Times that the new champ's gonna take all them cabbage leaves back home to his native Cuba.
I see what you mean, boy.
I don't blame him. Yes, I don't blame him. And he's gonna buy one of them sugar cane plantations and just sit back under one of them blessed palm trees and let pure grade A fresh air. None of that secondhand stuff.
I hear you talking, boy.
He's gonna let it bathe every section of his beautiful body. And hereafter, he will not hit a lick, even at a snake. Unless, of course, it bites him first.
Hey, what are you guys standing around dreaming about? Huh? Now drive them spikes in. Get to work.
And you raised your hammer to drive the spikes in again. But you heard a drumming in your head of a boxing bag. And you saw the house with bay windows and sunlight streaming in. And suddenly you stopped and looked at your hands, your torso, your biceps. You made your way to Mamie's gym. Began drubbing the bag to the pat of her feet.
You got the body, honey boy. You do what I tell you, you'll learn how to handle it.
Yeah? You sure I can be good?
I only take on those I think's got the master touch. Huh? I don't fool with squares. That's enough. Now listen, honey boy. What I want you to do is stay on the bag. Uh-huh. Get your timing straight. Then I'll try you out on a few of the slick featherweights around St. Louis.
What then?
Skip one rope at a time, honey. I'll tell you when to jump again. Back on the bag.
You worked the bags. Mamie showed you how to look into a man's eyes, tell what part of his body was going to try to throw at you next. She erased your weak punches, searched for a name to give you. And one day she said...
Every time I come in the gym, you're just a punching and a whistling. I ought to name you Melody. Melody Jackson. All right, Melody. The slickers are ready.
You took on the St. Louis featherweights, and all the ref could do was open his mouth and tell about it.
The winner by a knockout in 16 seconds and a voice from Melody Jackson!
The winner by a knockout in 14 seconds of the first round, Melody Jackson!
You stopped the St. Louis boys with your spike driver's hook and came out of the gym one day and Mamie had a new rope to skip.
Hey, what's the car for, Mamie?
You and me, honey. Get in.
Well, where are we going?
I told your grandma and old man you were leaving for Pittsburgh today. They didn't weep.
Pittsburgh?
Yeah, you're the next feather champ. They don't allow no interracial bouts in St. Louis, so we going where they do. Get in. My foot's pressing the gas.
You rode over the highways toward the Steel City, searching for that house with sunshine coming in through the windows. You went looking around Pittsburgh, begging for fights until you almost had to beg for bread. You got hungry. You were ready for any deal. You got in the ring with a veteran southpaw. You were pig meat for the veteran. And when the bell gave him permission, he ripped you to bits with jabs, uppercuts, hooks, crosses, slashed at your empty stomach with body blows, beat you to the canvas again and again until you heard Mamie cry out from the corner.
Stay down, kid! Stay down, honey! Stay down!
But you kept getting up until your blood blinded you and you were beaten down. And when your mind went blank, your body obeyed the command. And suppose you'd asked to go home and rode back towards St. Louis, bandaged, bruised, burning, aching, hardly hearing Mamie talking.
I keep telling you, one loss don't mean nothing. You're championship caliber. Let's head west, to California, where there's no winners to worry about, where this Arizmendi, the feather champ, hides out.
Take me to St. Louis, trainer. I'm through fighting.
But you ain't started, honey boy. You got cut up, but you got delicate skin. Your only fault. You should have been born a woman. But it'll toughen. I'm talking to you. California.
The sign says St. Louis is just up ahead.
You limp back to St. Louis, leave Mamie sitting in the car. Walk back like a convict who'd escaped but didn't make good. Your grandma's waiting at the door. She just lifts your hands.
Your bone's been broken.
They'll heal.
If you can't be a surgeon, preach the gospel. Come on in.
You look at the tired old shack with the empty eye sockets, where your dream of being a surgeon was born. And you look about the town where it was killed. And you think of the Cuban kid who'd gotten gold enough to buy crystal clear windows with sun coming through them. And you step back in the shack and say,
I'm not coming in, Grandma. I'm going away.
Where? You ain't gonna be no surgeon with hands like that.
The surgery I'm gonna do, my hands will handle it, I think. Goodbye, Grandma.
You turned back, and you went back up Franklin Street and around the corner, and you saw her.
Get in, honey. One look, and I knew you'd come back ready for the kill. Them scars will heal on your face and hands. Them inside won't. Get in, kid.
You got in. And it took 20 hungry days before you reached California. Petty luck got you in on small clubs. While you stalked the West Coast featherweights, Mamie figured out the angles. You kept dropping that bag for timing.
That's just like in Pittsburgh, only worse. The champ won't come near you. And to make things worse, all these clubs out here have their bouts on the same night. We can't make but one fight a week.
Just one a week, huh?
Yeah. Listen, honey. Hereafter, you use my name. You'll be Henry Armstrong instead of Melody Jackson. They haven't gotten scared of Armstrong yet.
Sure. See, I was thinking.
Yeah?
There are five clubs out here, all having fights on the same night. Now, these ads here show the Rainbow Club's bout starts at 7 p.m.
Uh-huh.
The Garden starts at 7:30 p.m. The Arcade Arena starts bouts at 8 p.m. The Gilmore at 9. And the main events at Shamrock Stadium don't go on until 9:30.
Uh-huh.
Now, suppose you book me to fight featherweights next Friday at each stadium.
You've been drinking, honey.
Look, if I knocked them all out and had a cab waiting outside each club, I could make them all. We could make enough money to pay expenses. And besides, so many people hear about it, the champ would have to fight us.
Only one little thing you're overlooking.
Yeah?
We'd have to put up every dollar we could borrow as guarantee on a deal like that. And if just one guy, just one of those five guys stopped you, you'd be washed up.
Mamie?
If just one guy stopped you.
Let one try. Set him up, baby.
You went back to your timing on the bag while Mamie went out and set up the fights. Five fights in five clubs for Friday night between the hours 7 and 9:30. A rendezvous with the best featherweights in the West. And when it was set, Mamie's fingers dug into your biceps and she whispered,
"All right, honey. Be careful."
And suppose you stepped over the ropes at the Rainbow at 7:10 p.m. on the head. You saw Slugger George weave before you, and you worked your way on top of him and threw thunder at him. And you stood impatient while the referee held up your hands and said,
"The winner by a knockout in 2 minutes and 10 seconds of the first round, Henry Armstrong."
You slipped on your robe, grabbed a cab, got over to the gardens at 7:36 p.m., climbed into the ring, and Fanello Anzio was waiting. You caught him coming in with two terrible left hooks that spun him around like a top. You shot a right cross to the stomach that traveled 6 inches and sent Anzio down like he'd been shot with a rifle. You kept dancing to keep warm while the referee shouted,
"The winner by a knockout in the first round, Henry Armstrong!"
And you whipped on over to the Arcade Arena across the street. At 8:15 p.m., Bella Anthony had ducked into your left uppercut, and you straightened him up like a soldier on drill, and he toppled out of the ring.
"The winner by a knockout in the third round, Henry Armstrong!"
You got over to the Gilmore Stadium with half the fight fans in town now following you, and you pulled yourself through the ropes and whirled into Jeffrey Kane. You found him rugged and tough and standing toe-to-toe with you round after round, ripping at your skin until blood washed your face, and you sucked in a deep breath and threw all the power of your shoulder behind a hook that nearly tore his head from his body. He went to his corner, sat down on a stool, and he called it a night. And suppose you rode up to the gates of Shamrock Stadium, and with bandages over your cut eyes and cheek, and the curious crowds crying to get inside, fatigue jabbed at your body for the first time, and you called up all your strength for number five. Weaved your body across the ring like a cobra, missed him when he ducked, but slammed six machine gun lefts to his head when he didn't. And you heard Mamie shout through the crowds,
"He's got to!"
You knew he had to, because the crowd was yelling for it, and they didn't stop until next month you and Baby Arizmendi came face to face in the squared circle. And 10 rounds later, the ref cried,
"The winner by decision, Henry Armstrong!"
And somehow in the whirlwind drive, you had gained something and lost something. Had gained an exotic thrill from the ecstasy of the crowd. Lost your destination. Managers and backers were now fighting over your contracts like hawks over a calf's heart. And you didn't bother to look around when somebody came into the gym and said,
"A friend of mine and I'd like to buy your contract, champ."
"Yeah? How do y'all want to buy it?"
"We could do you a lot of good."
"Like what?"
"Like getting a title fight that'd be recognized. Too bad New York won't recognize you for whipping Arizmendi."
"Yeah.
If my friend and I take over your contract, we'll get the best manager in the country to handle you. Big Eddie Meade. Jumbo Meade, shrewdest manager in the game."
"Hey, who are you and this friend of yours?"
"My name's George Rapp. My partner's Al Jolson."
"Okay."
It was okay. They sent over the new manager, Meade. He came in when the gym was going at top speed.
Glad to meet you. Glad to meet you, Armstrong. Who's the woman?
My trainer.
Any objections, big boy?
We'll see. We'll see who wins in the end. Now, I got a proposition, Armstrong.
Proposition? Oh. Hey, cut out that noise back there, you guys.
Say. Huh? Let them keep all the racket they want. I gotta have some noise. I don't trust no quiet situation. Yeah, that's better. I gotta have noise. I need it.
Hey, Mac.
Yeah?
Mac's my secretary. Take 1,000 and play Noisy Boy in the fifth at Santa Anita, will you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Noise and horses, my weaknesses. Now, this proposition I got. Joe Louis is the big name in boxing nowadays. He steals the show. Nobody pays any attention to the little fighters.
So
when lesser fighter in the lighter divisions can do something stupendous, gigantic, he can't get nowhere. Now, if you can win the featherweight title...
Get me the match, and it's mine.
And the lightweight crown and the welterweight crown.
One man do that?
One man in a million can. Armstrong, maybe. Scoop the field. Run up and down the boxing scale like a pianist over a keyboard.
I don't like it.
I like it.
Good man. Good man. Hey, Mac.
Yeah.
Mac, put me 500 on good man Lee in the fifth at Pimlico.
Okay.
And hey, you guys back there, make some noise, huh? Good, you make me nervous with that tombstone attitude. Noise, hey. Now, what are you thinking?
Look, Jumbo. The featherweight, lightweight, welterweight divisions are the toughest in the game. If Henry tries to dominate him, he'll wear himself out.
Yeah, they're the toughest, all right. In the heavyweights, you got the lumber and bulls. In the welterweight, lightweight, featherweight ranks, you get the tiger sharks. The fast little ones who can dart in and out, cut your body up to ribbons. The guy who rules the tiger sharks got to be the best boxer in the world. Got to be the best.
You're being baited like a fish.
I know it. But I'll bite, baby.
All right, let's work it out.
All right.
Let's go on the march. You take special pains with your training, Henry. Get so you can knock an overambitious boy out in any round you call. Then you go barnstorming around the country. Try for, say, 37 knockouts in 38 fights. That way you'll wake up the world. Meanwhile, Big Eddie Meade will be angling for the bouts with the champs. We'll try and schedule a bout in the gardens with the New York feather champ, Petey Sarin. Say for about October of this year of our Lord, 1937. You take him like Grant took Richmond.
The winner and new featherweight champion of the world, Henry Armstrong.
Then go around the continent, fighting welterweights. Yeah, jump to the welters. Run up a string of KOs in that class, and I'll arrange for a bout with Barney Ross. See you around May, 1938. Gear yourself up for that one. Barney's a bad actor, one of the real sharks. But if you take him on schedule, you'll have that precious welter title.
The winner and new welterweight champion of the world, Henry Armstrong!
Then I'll be angling around for a match with the lightweight king while you tune up. You keep driving. That whirlwind drive that makes them call you perpetual motion. And even though this Ambers ducks us, I'll have him forced into a match with you, say around August of 38. I'll be right in your corner. So all you gotta do is take Ambers on schedule, and good Lord almighty, 3 crowns will be on your head. Take him. This round. Take him.
I'll try.
Honey boy, don't kill yourself. Don't.
All right. And suppose it all came about according to schedule, and you threw yourself into the 12 rounds with the canny ambers and found them whipping back at you with stinging lefts and rights that slashed your cheekbones wide open. Once again, your face was washed in blood, but you kept boring in, beating them back round after round. And went back to your corner at the end of the 11th. Cut, split, bleeding in a dozen places, eyes bulged. Why, so bad, even Big Eddie's face was red and worried, and Mamie's hand shook when she put collodium and tincture of iodine to your split lips. You looked at referee Donovan, afraid he'd stop the fight before the title was in your hands, and you leaped out for the last round, and when he tore at your split lips again, you threw punches at him like a human windmill. You pinned him against the rope, slammed home rights, lefts, rights, lefts, rights, lefts, rights, lefts, until you were moving automatically, and you never knew the fight was over until you felt someone tugging at your hands and saying,
"The winner and new lightweight champion, the only man in history to hold three world titles at one time, Henry Armstrong!"
And suppose you stood up there lonely for a while and realized 10 years had passed you by. Grandma's been dead and buried a long time. Fighting. It's your occupation, like surgery to surgeons. Big Eddie Meade, he's dead. And slowly, almost so slowly you hardly notice it, you begin losing. You toss off your featherweight crown, you can't make the weight anymore. A crafty Scotch fighter takes away your lightweight crown.
The winner and new lightweight champion, Sammy Angott.
And the welter crown, that's the hardest of all to lose. They had to blast your eyes apart to get it off, to open old scars. And you went swinging down to the canvas, and the ref looked at your scars and stopped the fight.
The winner by the technical knockout in the 12th round, and the new welterweight champion, Fitzy Isibet.
And suppose it went on like that with the minnows and sardines snapping at the sick and weakening tiger shark, and your eyelids were cut open, sewed back, cut open, sewed back, and after a doctor told you,
"This is the last operation we can perform on those eyes. If you keep out of the ring, they'll hold up, I'm sure. If you go back fighting again, I can't vouch for you coming through with enough sight to see. It's up to you."
You heard what they said, honey.
I heard.
Then what are you doing back in the gym?
All the money's gone. Spent in 1,000 ways. It goes when you're on top. Then you forget why you went that way in the first place.
Honey.
I know what I'm doing. I can make it again.
No fighter ever makes a comeback. You know that.
All I know is that I set out to get a house with crystal clear windows in it. Sunshine pouring through. Eyesight's no good without that. Come on, step away from the bag, Mamie. I'm going to go through the sharks again.
Would you have tried it? Well, he did. He kept on his leather weapons and again waited for the ranks of the lightweights and the welterweights. He won 40 out of 49 fights. He made one of the rare comebacks in the boxing game. He remembered the bleak life in St. Louis, the grandma who wanted him to preach, and the blind eye sockets of the windows without panes. He shielded his precious eyes from the blows of the sharpshooters, and then he quietly eased out of the limelight. But he bought a little house with the sunshine pouring all down through the crystal clear windows.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the saga of Melody Jackson, the story of a triple title holder, Henry Armstrong. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of Henry Armstrong was played by Fred Pinkard. Others were Louise Pruitt, Dorothy Tate, Oscar Brown Jr., Fred Smith, and Studs Terkel. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Otto Christofek. This is Charles Chan inviting you to be with us again next week when Destination Freedom presents the story of Chicago's alderman, Archibald Carey.